Good afternoon. All right. Good afternoon, everybody. Thank you very much for joining us in this session, Upgrading Active Directory the Safe Way by Using Virtualization. Very happy that you're all still here. I know it's the last session of TechEd, and you all probably want to go to that big party tonight. Lots of free beer, lots of free food. I'm not saying it's going to be good, but at least it's free, so that's cool. But, you know, thanks for being here, and even though after four heavy days, still have that mind to listen to what we're going to talk about, Active Directory, right? My name is Mike Ressler. I work for Veeam Software. My official title is Microsoft Evangelist. I don't know who invented that one, but, you know, I have to live with it. And normally, I would have done this session completely on my own. Now, the nice thing about TechEd is you meet a lot of old, new friends. And in my case, there was an old friend that came here and said, hey, you're here, that's cool. So with me is Sander, and Sander is from the Netherlands, Sander Berkauer. He's an Active Directory specialist, and really a specialist. I mean, I'm more a system center virtualization guy, but he's the deep dive guy to go to when you talk about Active Directory. So I was talking to him, explaining my session, and he was giving me some pointers. So if you don't mind, I just invited him on stage. You know, if you got difficult questions on AD, I can duck so he can answer them. And if you have questions about virtualization, then let's hope I can answer them. With that, what we're going to do the next couple of minutes, or 1 hour and 50 minutes, we're going to talk about Active Directory and some techniques that you can use today to make your life as an IT pro easier. So first, we're going to talk about the challenges of upgrading Active Directory. And I assume if you already did this before, you really, really love those projects. Lots of work, lots of danger, and hopefully everything went well in one weekend. But after that, we're going to talk about why do you want to upgrade to Windows Server 2012 and Active Directory, or even R2 and Active Directory. What are the advantages, and what can you do with it today in a highly virtualized world? Then we're going to really talk about that virtualization part. It is possible. But how is it possible? What makes it sure, and how can you check those kind of things? We're also quickly going to talk about functional levels. The reason is very simple. We still see a lot of companies where we come in that say, hey, yeah, we got Windows Server 2012 Active Directory, and then their functional level is 2003.
Or 2000 even.
I don't think it's even possible, but that's another discussion. And then let's talk about what we can do to upgrade those Active Directories from 2012 to R2. And we're going to use three different techniques. We're going to talk about cloning, what you can do with that. We're going to talk about Hyper-V replica. Yes, it is supported for Active Directory, and you can use it in your advantage. And then we're going to talk about the backup solution that you can use the same way to do all your testing on Active Directory to make sure that whatever you do actually works without breaking down your entire production environment. Quick recap, some Q&A, and then, of course, time to leave and to party. So let's continue. So how it used to be, right? Let's go back to the good old days of IT pros very, very long time ago, like a couple of years ago, and what we did when we had an AD project. To start with, it was extremely time-consuming. I'm pretty sure that you still know that you had to make plans and you had to do a test out, which means you had to build a proof of concept or maybe a test environment or a lab or something like that. And in reality, it wasn't really your production. It was something you set up to do a test, but it didn't match your production. Maybe if you're lucky, sort of, but it was never completely the same. And I'm pretty sure we all know this. Now I'm an evangelist, but I used to be a consultant, and the amount of Active Directory projects I've done was, you know, we do this over the weekend, so from Saturday to Sunday afternoon, we troubleshoot why we have a blue screen, and then we actually do the project. We saw this too much, and it was really dangerous, because so many applications depend on that Active Directory in your environment. It was also complex. It was not, you know, the traditional Microsoft way. Next, finish, wait, drink a coffee, woohoo, we installed something. Unfortunately, it doesn't work like that. Things get better, but it used to be much more difficult. And then, of course, we had this kind of checklist everywhere. What did we need to do with such a project? You know, things like create a lab, do a test deployment, you know, create a recovery plan. Anybody of you ever had to do a forest recovery? That was nice. Very long. It works, but it wasn't the most fun thing to do. And then you had to test that plan before you actually went to it in your production. After that, you had to prepare your Active Directory for upgrade. Most of the time, you would install a new member server, put AD domain servers on that one, and then start upgrading all the other domain controller. You might have default security policies that you afterwards had to adjust. Oh, and by the way, we had some things going on with group policies. Sometimes we had to change those as well. And then finally, even do a cleanup, like you would remove your oldest domain controllers or something. So a lot of work, while, you know, it might be able to do it a little bit more easier. And in the end, this came up. It became pretty expensive. Imagine that you have these expensive consultants like me hanging over the entire weekend. My boss was happy. You know, the company's boss not so happy. And unfortunately, I never earned more on it because I worked on the weekend, but that's another discussion. And I hope my ex-boss is not in the room now. Sorry about that. So let's forget about that. Let's go away from the past, and let's see if we start thinking about upgrading now to 2012 AD, and why we see why all the advantages you can get of doing that, and start planning those.
Yeah, so why would you go through all that pain, all the trouble of upgrading your Active Directory? Well, it's not that hard anymore. And there's a couple of really compelling features in Active Directory domain services, in Windows Server 2012 and Windows Server 2012 R2, that you really want to use. I'm not talking about the cap that we used to have in Active Directory domain services on the amount of objects that you could have, 2 billion objects. You know, that's all scalability stuff that only a couple of organizations encounter. I'm talking about real benefits for every organization, for anyone here in the room. And I've divided them up in 3 buckets. So let's go through them. The first bucket is what we call simplified deployment. And in simplified deployment, if you look at Windows Server 2012 and what the Active Directory team has done, they've done a tremendous job of replacing, well, most of the scenarios for DCPromo.exe, and they've come up with what is known as the Active Directory Domain Services Installation Wizard. And this is some really cool piece of software, because what we used to do if we want to create a new domain controller is we used to do AD prep and stuff like that. Even in small environments with only a couple of domain controllers, you needed to do AD prep, you needed to check it, you needed to check if it was replicated, and then you could install a domain controller. Well, the ADDS installation wizard does all that for you. Even better, it does indefinite retries. So it's not DC Promo telling you that it has failed. No, I don't even care. I want to say if it's failed or not. Just retry it and retry it and retry it. I'll get a cup of coffee, go to the toilet perhaps. Then if I come back and it hasn't finished, okay, you know what? Let's cancel this and then go ahead and make sure that it will work. Also, what I've done is that with the new ADDS installation wizard, we have faster installation from media. So what we've done with Windows Server 2003 and Windows Server 2008 and R2 versions of those operating systems is we could do an installation from media. We could make a media using NTDS util, and we could pre-stage a domain controller with that media so it wouldn't have to replicate that much. Yeah. Instead, that was pretty time-consuming, because the media that I created, that was tested on consistencies before it was used. Well, there's another hour you're not going to get back. So they've changed that. They have really fast checks now that say, well, just use it, or you know what, I'm still going to check it, just to be sure. And of course, if you really want to be fast and deploy domain controllers, there's PowerShell now. The Active Directory team was one of the last teams to incorporate PowerShell and build a PowerShell commandlets to build domain controllers. And they went even further, and they did stuff for replication and topology and all that stuff. You can do almost anything with PowerShell these days. And that's fun. And when I'm talking about deployment, the one thing that is really going to speed up your deployments is using Server Core. And Server Core has its limitations, and Server Core definitely poses a couple of new challenges. But if you're looking at Server Core installations of Windows Server 2012 or Windows Server 2012 R2, I can host every one of the five Active Directory technologies that we have on Server Core these days. So even if you want to deploy AD RMS using Server Core, you can these days. So please, if you haven't yet, give that a try. In the explanations that we do somewhere further in this session, we always show you the PowerShell commands. These work on both Core installations and Server Core installations. The other bucket that I want to talk about is virtualization enhancements. So in the past, Active Directory domain controllers were not virtualization aware. Furthermore, Microsoft even recommended against virtualizing domain controllers. So just a quick show of hands. Who has virtualized Windows Server 2008 and Server 2008.2 domain controllers in their environment? Right. So we all did it. Just wasn't supported. Well, most of the stuff that virtualization really brings to the table wasn't supported. What we can, Windows Server 2012 Active Directory and Windows Server 2012 R2 Active Directory domain controllers are virtualization aware. And that gives us a whole lot of capacity and a whole lot of possibilities to do interesting stuff. But I'll get to that later. Let's first discuss the third bucket, which is easier management. And this is the biggest bucket, like you wouldn't believe. Just a quick show of hands again. Who uses the Active Directory Administrative Center? Okay, so I'm seeing not that much of hands, probably because you're using Windows Server 2008 R2, and Active Directory Administrative Center on that was slow, to say the least. But Active Directory Administrative Center is the tool of choice for me when I have to manage, deploy, and set up Active Directory, because it has three main things that I want to know. First of all, it has a PowerShell history viewer. Everything that I click in the Active Directory Administrative Center in Windows Server 2012 or 2012 R2 is displayed as PowerShell commandlets real time after I click OK. So it's not like we used to have it in Exchange Server. Like, okay, let's configure all the stuff, and then there's one tab that says, oh yeah, this is how the PowerShell command looks like. No, it's like, I do that, I click OK, bam, PowerShell does that. Thank you. And I can hide it if I'm not at all interested in PowerShell. Another feature that the Active Directory Administrative Center brings to the table is the fine-grained password policy graphical user interface. So we now can define and manage and delete fine-grained password policies from the graphical user interface of Active Directory Administrative Center. Because, you know, there's a couple of tools that everyone uses, but you have to keep it in check, you have to update it, perhaps even delete it, but now we can do that with built-in tools. And the same goes for the Active Directory Recycle Bin, because my mind was blown when I heard that we have the Active Directory Recycle Bin, but every time I wanted to restore an object, I needed to go through PowerShell. This is not something that I want to do repetitively. So why can't I only do that on PowerShell? All right. But now we can do this with just clicking it and restoring it with a deleted items folder. Well, yeah, deleted items folder. And just get things done. Also, the Active Directory Administrative Center is the only tool within Windows Server that allows you to manage dynamic access control, which allows you to have claims like you have in Active Directory Federation Services inside of Kerberos tokens. And that gives you the rich authorization scenarios that you want to offer to your colleagues. And of course, if you're really handling a pretty fairly big Active Directory environment or fairly big network environment, you are running into some problems with Windows activation. Active Directory-based activation in Windows Server 2012 and 2012 R2 helps you to manage activation throughout your networking environment, like that. So you don't have to set up KMS. You don't have to set up multiple KMS servers and make them replicated, stuff like that. No, just Active Directory and Active Directory replication, just like that. So let's go back to the age-old question, to be or not to be, to virtualize or not to virtualize. And actually, you've already answered this question. Yes, we are virtualizing domain controllers. We're doing that. You know what? I'm live migrating them or vMotioning them, even if it's not or not officially supported. And let me be very clear on this. If you're going to deploy Windows Server 2012 or Windows Server 2012 or two domain controllers, make them virtualized. Don't even think about it. Just deploy virtualized domain controllers. Because all the challenges that we had in the past with Windows Server 2008 R2 and before, these are all in the past. You don't have to worry about the domain controllers rolling back. You don't have to worry about lingering objects. You don't have to worry about inconsistent attribute values and everything that's on this slide, because it is in the past, if you're using a hypervisor that supports the VM generation ID. And it's funny, because if you look at it from an ID Pro point of view, all the hypervisors that we're using today are VM generation ID capable. So this is not something that we're going to delay any further. If I'm going to deploy a domain controller, I'm going to deploy it virtually. VM generation is the key here. VM generation ID is a solution that Microsoft designed. It's a solution that they've given away to VMware, that they've shared with Citrix and all the other hypervisors. There's a white paper that says, well, if your hypervisor is capable of doing that, then we're going to meddle with the VM generation ID. And if you do something else, then we don't. We're going to share the slides with you. There's some hidden slides in there with some more information. So you can just, if you're at home, you can just look that up, how that works. And if you're going to virtualize domain controllers and you want to have the VM generation ID, make sure that if you're virtualizing using Hyper-V, that you're running Windows Server 2012 or Hyper-V Server 2012 and up. And also, and I think that is pretty cool, the VM generation ID capability is in fact present and working in Windows 8 and Windows 8.1. You can just use it for demos and all that stuff. It's also present in VMware, vSphere. So if you're using vSphere 5 and up, or if you're using VMware's workstation technology, this is supported. You cannot mess up your Active Directory domain controllers by doing the simple stuff on VMware. And the same goes for Xen Server. If you're using Xen Server 6.2.0, which is about 6 months old, you're going to get the same technology out of the box. But just be aware that both on VMware products and Citrix products, you have to use and install the VMware tools or the Xen integration components, because else it doesn't work. Because this depends on a driver, and that is present in the integration components and the VMware tools, and that is what stuffs the VM generation ID into the memory of the domain controller to make it work. So let's take a look at how that looks. Right? So this is a virtual domain controller. It's running ADDS. And when we look at tools and go to computer management, and then to device manager, and we'll click on that, we'll see all the devices. And actually, part of the system devices is the Microsoft Hyper-V generation counter. If you look at its properties, you will see that it is actually a .sys, so it is a driver that does this stuff. It's funny because it is very easy for you to find out whether your domain controller is running on a VM generation ID capable hypervisor, because there's a device in the system devices. Well, one little detail about that is that even if you're running VMware vSphere in a supported version with the VMware tools, you won't by default see the Hyper-V generation counter device, because VMware has chosen to make it a hidden device by default. I can only speculate about the reason, but I think that VMware is not that happy to show that on every Windows Server 2012 or Windows Server 2012 R2 domain controller running on VMware, there is a device with Hyper-V in its name. But I can only speculate. Mike already told a little bit about functional levels. If you're going to upgrade your Active Directory, and if you want to take advantage of all the features that I'm rambling on about right now, you have to look at your functional levels. If you have an Active Directory domain that was first set up with Windows Server 2003 domain controllers, and you would just promote it using next install finish, then your domain functional levels and forest functional levels will still be Windows 2000 server. It's funny because if you want to upgrade your Active Directory domain services to Windows Server 2012 R2, you will be blocked from that, because that needs the domain functional level and forest functional level of Windows Server 2003. And functional levels are a bit obscure for most, but it really isn't that hard. Because if you look at the Microsoft best practices, what you'll see is if you want to have a domain functional level or a forest functional level that is higher, and if you're looking at the Active Directory features, you will see, well, this requires domain functional level for Windows Server 2008, for instance, then all your domain controllers in the scope of the functional level, so either domain or forest, need to run that operating system. Also, when you're testing this, and this is why I find it kind of funny, because this is always a nice discussion at customers, the domain controllers need to be replicating correctly. If I'm trying to test upgrading a functional level, and I'm thinking, well, I don't want to replicate this stuff, let's just take one domain controller and isolate it in terms of replication, then it will just error out. It will say, well, I'm not replicating, so you know what? I'm not doing that. So trust me, you'll need the smarter virtualization tricks for those scenarios that we're going to teach you today. So the functional levels are really straightforward. There's Windows 2000 native, and there's only Windows Server functional levels that you see here. The domain controllers within the scope of the functional level basically need to run that operating system or higher. And one of the things that is something that you might want to remember from this session is that from Windows Server 2008 R2 level, you can upgrade and downgrade. So if you up the functional level and you think, oh, wait, I got to have a domain controller that is running a lower version, you can go back to Windows Server 2008 R2. And you might need that because the Active Directory migration tool that you can use to migrate stuff from one forest to another forest needs Windows Server 2008.2 domain controllers still. They're working on a solution, so don't worry about that too long. And of course, we're sharing with you a link where you can find more information on the functional levels. So how does that look in the interface? Again, we have a domain controller. It doesn't even matter if this is a virtualized domain controller or not. And within the Active Directory Administrative Center, this is what it looks like. You guys don't use it, so welcome. You can see for the domain upgrade.local, we can see in its properties what its domain function level and forest function levels are. And in this case, it's Windows Server 2003. No wonder, because if I look at the operating system for the domain controller itself, you will see that this is actually, let's go to local server, a Windows Server 2012 Data Center Edition. So yeah, I can upgrade this machine to 2012R2 without problems with the functional level.
And this is also the scene we're going to use now for our demos. Is the techniques we're going to use, we start from this 2012. And when we created this lab, you can see it was morning, so we weren't really thinking bad. Upgrade.local, probably not your domain. And naming your DC old DC is also not the best thing. Old DC itself is a PDC emulator. And old DC 2 isn't, because this is going to be important when you do some kind of testing that you can't do specifically on the PDC emulator, like the first technique, for example. And let's start with that. And I'm going to leave the word to you again, although you are hijacking my entire session here. But first technique is something for you. It's called cloning.
Yeah, so domain controller cloning. Let's get to that slide. There we are. These guys are cloning. Isn't that funky? Cool. Let's see. So, when I have virtual domain controllers running on a hypervisor that supports the VM generation ID, when I clone or copy or reuse the hard disk of that domain controller, it's going to see that. Because that VM generation ID value that is stored in RAM is going to change. And since Windows Server 2012, domain controllers take that value from RAM and store it in an attribute that is not replicated because there's no use for it. And with every significant write to the database, those values are compared. So if I take the hard disk of a virtual domain controller, for instance, and I put it back in time, for instance, I'm going to restore it, then the hypervisor is required, according to the white paper, to reset that VM generation ID. And when the domain controller starts, when the Active Directory services start, it will see, well, let's look at that. Something has changed. So let's look at what I need to do then. Well, when I restore it, obviously, it will see that there's some changes with the unique serial number and stuff like that. So it would go to the Active Directory store mode. But I can also teach an old dog new tricks and specify an XML file on removable media or in the NTDS folder where the database is stored and say, you know what? If you see the VM generation ID change in memory, let's change our name. You know what? Let's change our IP address or get an IP address from DHCP. And let's become a new domain controller. Brand spanking new replica for the same domain. Wow. So instead of working for an entire day or even 2 days, or you know, in your organization it might even be a week, to get the sign off and to get the work done, to get a domain controller in place with the anti-malware drivers, the backup, the monitoring, all that stuff, if all that stuff supports cloning, you can have an extra replica domain controller in 10 minutes. Heck, if it's server core, you can even do it in 5. I've demoed this stuff. I couldn't even get it to break. It is really that simple. And I managed to do that under 10 minutes every time. And the steps to do so are really simple. So first of all, I'm going to have to check my requirements. Then I have to make sure that the domain controller has the permissions in Active Directory to be cloned. So it's not up to the virtualization admin, but it's up to the Active Directory admin to make sure that a domain controller is clonable or not. We've got a question.
What happens after you clone the machine and the VMware tools don't start?
So the question is, what happens if you clone the machine and the VMware tools don't start? Then you'll see that the VM is actually going to start up in Directory Services Restore mode, because it will see that something has changed, or it will just be the same situation as you had in Windows Server 2008.02 and before. So luckily, even VMware has made its VMware tools pretty robust to not encounter that situation. Thank you for your question. Also, after the domain controller has the cloning permissions, we want to make sure that there is no applications that do not understand cloning. So if your monitoring agent does not support cloning, and it's not included within the list of the applications and monitoring agents and drivers and stuff that Microsoft knows of, it will just report on that. Then, of course, we're going to create the clone config file, which specifies the domain controller name, the IP address, the site name, stuff like that. And the fun part is, I've never seen anyone use it, but you can even specify an IPv6 address for new domain controllers. So this is really, really something, I guess. Then, of course, you're going to export and import the domain controller. So let's look at the requirements checking that we need to do. First of all, the person doing all the actions needs to be a member of the domain admins group. We're going to show you the PowerShell commands. You have to run these PowerShell commands elevated, or else you won't have the permissions to do so. The domain controller needs to run on a VM generation ID aware hypervisor, and the domain controller holding the primary domain controller emulator, the PDCE, flexible single master operations, FISMO role, needs to run at least Windows Server 2012. The forest functional level needs to be at least 2003, and the schema version needs to be at least 56. But if you have a Windows Server 2012 domain controller, it probably is. And you need to eject any media if you want to if you don't want to have situations where the machine won't boot because it doesn't see a DVD or anything else like that. You can check the PDC emulator really quick using a PowerShell command. And this is the one. You can check the schema version pretty quick using these PowerShell commands. Oh, and there's even DS query. How good of you. And after that, if all the permissions and stuff like that are in place, you have the right account to do stuff, you have the right versions of domain controllers and stuff like that, you can grant permissions. And the fun thing is, if the schema version is 56, then you will automatically get the clonable domain controllers group. These guys have made it really simple. So if I want to have a domain controller and I want it to be able to be cloned, I need to add it to some obscurely named group named the clonable domain controllers. Okay, I think I can remember this from memory. Then, of course, we're going to have to identify issues. And again, there's a really nice, well, it's a bit long, perhaps, PowerShell command that we can use for that. And the shortcut is get-a-dd-c, and then tab, it's going to do the ADDC cloning excluded application list. And it is a bit shorter than it was in the beta. Fortunately, it's still on, and it's going to check for applications and services that Microsoft doesn't know. There's a couple of services that Microsoft already knows that are not clonable. So if the server is already a DHCP server, or if it's a certification authority, or if it's running the lightweight directory services, then you'll be prompted that these services are not clonable. So either uninstall them, or install them on other server and migrate over and stuff like that, because these are real blockers. And if you want to live dangerously, then you could say, well, you know, but just ignore it. And you can, if you really want to live dangerously and you see the output from the get ADDC cloning exclude application list command, you can say, you know what, just get with, use the same commandlet and add the dash generate XML. That will generate the XML file needed and place it inside of the NTDS folder where the directory database is, and it will just ignore everything that it came up with. I've seen that break. Pretty fun. Then we're going to create the clone config XML file, and there's a commandlet for that as well. You can also make it in Notepad. There is a sample clone config.xml file in C Windows System 32 that you can use for inspiration. But you can also make it on a command on the shell. And as I said, well, this is a nice example, actually, because we're going to add an IPv6 address instead of using or relying on DHCP. We're going to add a default gateway because, you know, domain controllers love accessing the internet for time synchronization, of course. The IPv6 subnet mask, that is something that we need if we're going to specify an IPv4 address. The DNS resolver, and that is something that you want to make sure is available during cloning, and the clone computer name, which is the new name for the domain controller that we're going to clone. And then using the capabilities of your hypervisor, you can import and export the domain controller. One word of caution, the clone command in VMware vSphere is a hot clone feature that doesn't reset the VM generation ID. So unfortunately, you cannot use that cloning feature, but you can export and import, and I think we're going to do that in the demo, a running domain controller on Hyper-V. It's easy, right?
Sounds like it.
You want to do it?
So that's what the AD guys do, right? The moment it gets risky, they give it to the virtualization administrators.
We give it to the consultants. Yeah.
Oh, even worse. And just for your information, we are going to do live demos as well. Unfortunately, we only got one lab environment, three different techniques. Doesn't mix and match that well. Also, you already said it briefly, but I want to make sure if you download our slides afterwards, everything which we're saying, because, you know, you see we like to use colors and things like that. We have a lot of hidden notes with everything on it, so you can reread it if you want to. All right, so the cloning, pretty simple. We type in those PowerShell commands, autocomplete. First thing I'm doing is really checking what is the PDC, which I know now is old DC. And then I'm looking for the schema object version that will normally tell me it's 56. So I'm happy, I'm a domain administrator, I've got no ISOs attached, so I can start. So first I'm going to add it to that specific group, the clonable domain controllers group. You can do this manually as well if you want to, but now that I'm working with PowerShell anyway, I can continue. When that is done, I'm going to look for that application list, and this is really the part where he's going to find on your servers whether it's necessary. So in my case, it's pretty easy. However, we saw on a regular basis a lot of applications that can't handle it. Think about backup guests, for example. They might have some issues. Antivirus, anti-malware, those can have issues as well. So you need to make sure of those whether it's possible or not, and otherwise make sure they're not on there. Now, when we have that, we're going to make that config file, and look how fast I can type. It's amazing what Camtasia can do and speeding up your videos. And then it gives you all that information. Now, it's making that file. It's done. and basically I am ready to go and to do my cloning. So what I've got is my old DC2, and that virtual machine is turned off. Right, so remember I had the old DC, which was the PDC emulator, and this old DC2, which is just another domain controller. I made sure it's off, it's closed, and I can go now very quickly and say, all right, let's export this, choose my target, and start exporting it. In reality, of course, what you're going to see now is going to be very fast. It takes a little bit more time, but still.
Oh, I want a Hyper-V host just like that.
Yeah, that would be nice if it would be so fast. In reality, the advantage of using Camtasia again, and otherwise it would be a very boring demo just watching this doing. But that's it. I haven't had any issues encountered except one, make sure that if you're gonna clone it to another hypervisor, that that hypervisor actually can see that import. So now we're gonna import it, very simple. We're gonna choose where we have exported it. Here we have it, select it, go for it, and it starts importing. A few things you're gonna see, and this is pretty important, is make sure you use copy the virtual machine, create a new unique ID. Otherwise, you will get in problem if you use one of the other ones. So think about it that you use the right one. So we're gonna select that, and then we're gonna do next. And one of the things which I really like now is, okay, what you're gonna see now is very, very bad behavior, storing everything in the default paths. Don't do this in production. But, you know, I had to be quick, I was recording. But what happens is that at a certain moment, actually my domain controller on that other host or this virtual machine on the other hypervisor couldn't find the same network. Luckily now you can easily change this and you can do this within the import wizard. So we're gonna change this. We're gonna choose one of those networks. They're not the same name, my virtual switches. And finally, we're gonna do finish, and then we actually see how great my hypervisors work. Two fantastic laptops as a demo environment. Not even having SSD, but they're flying. And then you're gonna do the entire import, and in the end, you have your new clone, your domain controller. One word of caution, and we'll come back in a couple of seconds. I should have actually made it even. Here we go. Because what you're gonna do now normally in production is go back to your first hypervisor and start that domain control that already existed, but that you had to shut down to do the export. You can actually do that before the import, but you know, I didn't thought of that. Is it still running here? Oh yeah, it is. So you're gonna start your domain controller, and then you're gonna actually start on the other hypervisor or even on the same one if you want to, your clones. Now, within that clone, the name will be changed to clone DC. It will have other IP addresses, but you see when you do the import, it's got the exact same name. And you saw I have been playing, I've got a few old DCs too. So don't forget to rename that, otherwise you have no idea anymore afterwards what you're doing. You start up, and then the magic of Active Directory, VM generation ID, will do everything else, and will make sure that after this is started up, gets running as it should. And now you actually have a new domain controller. Last thing is, of course, we put it that old DC2 computer account or domain controller account into that clonable domain controllers interface. So you want to take that one out afterwards. You can leave it there because you can use that config file over and over and over again to do cloning, but you might, you know, for security, take it out and do the entire process itself. So what you have now is a completely new domain controller, which is unique to one of your other member domain controllers, which you might now use to start an upgrade, to test out an upgrade. In worst case, you do the upgrade to a new operating system, it completely breaks, and the only thing you have to do is remove that from Active Directory, and you can start over again. So this is one way of using it. Downside, of course, is you are really using it directly into production, which also means if you test out a schema update or an update of a functional level, then you are doing that in production. So then this technique is probably not the best thing that you can use.
So what would you use then in those scenarios?
Another technique you can use is actually replication. It's pretty interesting as well. It is supported. I come to many people telling me, yeah, but we can't use Active Directory in Hyper-V Replica, it's not supported. Yes, it is. There are some cave cats. I mean, from the moment it's 2012 domain controller, planned failover is supported, unplanned failover is supported. Everything before, well, planned failover is supported, but it's not recommended because of the danger, and unplanned failover is not supported. So I'm not sure what that statement exactly means. So I probably don't want to use it in case you have Windows 2008 R2 or earlier. But from the moment you have 2012 DC, then you have supported and you can use Replica. And the cool thing about Replica is not the planned failover or the unplanned failover, because you prefer not to use those. The cool thing is that they have something which is called test failover. And test failover is going to allow you to take a sort of copy of your Replica and then see whether it can boot and do some other things with it to see if it actually works within your environment. Now, there's one big danger to this, and this is an idea, well, at least the Timecock picture idea I stole him from Adrian Finn, or Joe Elway, as most of you probably know him on Twitter.
What a winner of this TechEd Speaker Idol.
Oh, he won. That's
yeah, cool. He won.
I didn't even know that. So in Time Cop, in the movie, and yes, I can be wrong because my movie knowledge is not that good, but the idea was if you go back in time and you see or you meet yourself, then, you know, the world explodes or something like that. Anyway, something very, very bad happens. The same thing comes with that test failover you do from that Replica. If you create a copy of that Replica and you decide to start it up and you're going to be in the same VLAN, in the same production network, then suddenly, even if it has another IP, but you got two the same domain controls with the same name, the same IDs, that's not probably going to be good for your environment. So you want to try to avoid it. And the way you do that is by using IP injection. And you're going to make sure that it's got a completely different IP and that it's going to be on a quarantined lab network or something like that. Yeah, so that they can't see each other, that they can't talk to each other, so nothing wrong can happen. And it's pretty easy to do that with PowerShell again, or with GUI. Now, you were talking about long PowerShell commandlets.
This is, yeah.
Yeah, this one is nice as well. So this way, you can do some changes and to make sure that they don't see each other. And then you can actually build an entire virtual app. The cool thing is, because you can change all those IP addresses, that also means you can build a full quarantine lab, and you can put not only one domain controller in it, but maybe two, and maybe even put a replica of a SQL server or an application server or whatever you want, so you can test fully, if you upgrade Active Directory, whether your applications are still working and still talking to those domain controllers. So let's have a look at that one. So first, we're going to enable Replica. For those who know how to do it, I'll go quickly over it. But in the end, what you're going to do is you're going to go to the settings of your hypervisor. You're going to say replication configuration. And if your hypervisor are in the same domain, then it's very easy. Just say enable it, use Kerberos, and then allow replication from any server or maybe from others, and that's it. You can put in security if you're going to use certificates. But in this case, I didn't do that. Then we're going to just enable the replication of RDC. We're going to choose to which server we're going to replicate, which is just another hypervisor host. In my case, Hyper-V02. And you actually see that the domain is different from the domain from my domain controller, so that is all possible. Which virtual hard drives are you going to replicate? In case of DC, probably this all of them. What's the frequency? 30 seconds, 5 minutes, 50 minutes. Now, I already did sessions on Replica where I explained what's the difference and why wouldn't you use every day 30 seconds. What recovery points? How many? In a DC, most of the time, one is enough. And then when you're going to do your replication. If this is a production network, don't say start replication immediately. You might get your bandwidth and your end users a little bit mad. After the replication is enabled successfully, it will do the initial replication. And again, if you've got a large server, this can take some time. So we're cheating here again a bit to make sure that it's very, very fast to the other side. And then from the moment we have those that replica, it will every 5 minutes only send the delta changes over to the other side. So you can see it already happened. Reality, I think it was around 10 minutes before it happened, but you know. Then we're going to go to Hyper-V2, my other host, and you see I have there also OltC, which is actually that replica, right? So what we're going to do then is we're going to make that test failover, okay? So we're going to check, we're replicating, it's enabled, all those things. One of the things you need to know is that the best way to do this is don't enable the replication, let it replicate immediately, and then immediately after start by the replication, wait for 24 hours. So first thing I'm going to do is actually see my health. Is everything okay? And this is also important. Your health has to be okay, because otherwise you probably are using on an older version anyway. So everything looks good in my case. You see I'm only sending over 17 megabytes average every 5 minutes, so that's not that bad. And then we're going to look at those settings, right? I just told you about injecting the IP. We can do this to the GUI as well. And you have our network adapter. And by default, luckily, Microsoft decided to make it not connected. So what I'm going to do, if we do a test failover, we're going to change it to the virtual switch quarantine, which is my separated VLAN. And then we're going to go to failover TCP IP and type in that IP address, or again, use the PowerShell the way you want. That's what you prefer. We're okay, and now we're actually going to say, all right, let's do a test failover. So if all goes well, I should be doing now right-click, replication, do a test failover. Here we go, and what happens is we are getting, choosing our recovery point, and we're going to get a clone, maybe a bad word now since we already use cloning, but we're going to have a copy of that domain controller, which is now on a different VLAN and has different IP data. So we're going to start this, and now we can do our testing. Again, if you're going to look now at the properties of that test we made, you see that it's automatic now with a good switch. In reality, certainly with domain controllers, you're going to have at least two. One PDC and one domain server, or domain member domain controller. And the reason that is, some things you want to test, like, for example, upgrading a functional level, that PDC needs to be able to replicate with at least one domain controller. Otherwise, it won't even start. So make sure it does it. We start up, and we have now a fenced domain controller. We can test out whatever we want. Do you break something? No big deal. You throw away that virtual machine, and you can try again. And this is also very good for those who need to use ITIL, because they kind of can build their change process through this method. They can go to the change manager and say, look, I've got documented everything, I've tested it out, I've got my steps, screenshots, whatever you want to use, and I know how to do, and this will be in production. Yeah, I wanted to tell this as well. This is typical about replication. When you do a test failover, you have to think the moment you're replicating, that virtual machine is actually running. Which means it didn't got that switch to say, hey, I'm shutting down properly. So every replica test machine you're going to start up will tell you that it wasn't closed properly. This is normal, because it was running the moment you take. It's still consistent. There's no issues with it, but it just shows you because it doesn't see that switch. Maybe something Microsoft can, you know, remove in the next version or something. And then you can start. Go, play, and do whatever you want. Pretty easy, pretty thing to do. Advantages, think it's obvious. You can do and whatever you want. You can delete. Nothing has happened in your production environment. Disadvantages, well, you need to have Hyper-V replica, which means you need more resources to accommodate those replications. And of course, you did it, but nothing happened, and you cannot merge it into your production afterwards. So you still have to do it at a certain moment in production. All right, let's go to number three, the road to backup. Now, anybody wants to guess which backup solution we're going to use here? Maybe somebody who knows which company I worked for. But in the end, instead of just taking backups, Active Directory, and storing them somewhere and hoping you never need them, because in the end we buy backup software hoping that we'll never need it, we can actually put our backup to work and use it on a daily basis for our advantage. It's something your manager is going to love to hear, because that means they're paying money and you're actually doing something. The trick to use it here is something which we call Sure Backup. And Sure Backup is part of Veeam Backup Replication. And the idea behind it is that every time you take a backup, you can use that technology to automatically launch that backup, start it, do a lot of tests, and actually test where your backups will work when you need to restore. And we use something called Virtual Lab for that. And Virtual Lab is a fully isolated environment, so something that's built for you, which you need to do with Hyper-V replica yourself, and we're building that for you. Now, instead of just doing that automation, try out, close down the Virtual Lab, you can actually start this manually, which means you can use it to do every testing you want. And again, you can put much virtual machines in that Virtual Lab so you can test everything out you want. Now, how does it work? There's a bit of difference between Hyper-V replica, because in this case, with Shure Replica and Virtual Labs, you're actually going to have the same IP addresses as well. And you're going to be proxied through a proxy appliance so that they are completely fenced each other, but that means you still can talk to each other. And if you do an advanced setup, you're probably even going to talk to your application servers that are running in production if you want to, if you need to. How does this work?
A real demo?
A real demo now. Finally, I can use my two laptop. Never mind. So this is the interface, very simple. What I'm doing here is I'm taking backups. And this used to be also a myth. Can you take an image level backup of a domain controller without agents? The answer is yes. Without any issues, you can restore and you can do some funky job. So we got this backup job here. The only thing you need to make sure when you do that is within the guest processing, you need to use enable application aware image processing. Is that something we invented? Not at all. We just use Microsoft VSS technology. It's built for that, and it does all the nice work which we don't have to do anymore. That simple. Yes, no changes, please. And then in our backup infrastructure, what we built under Shure Backup is two things. First, we built an application group, and then we built a virtual app. And that application group actually, the only thing it does is bring some virtual machines together. And those are the ones we're going to start in that virtual lab, right? So I've got two virtual machines, both domain controls. It's a PDC emulator and another one. If I'm going to go edit, and this is nice, you can actually tell them what role it is and do all that testing for you without you needing to do something. Everything automated. So I could say it's a DNS server and a domain controller. Please do those tests when you start this virtual app to see if everything is functioning. Global catalog as well. You can change a bit with the startup options. I give it a bit more memory in this case, you know, to make it a bit faster. You can choose what the boot time is, the timeouts. You can do ping tests, heartbeat tests. And if you want to, you can just drop a lot of other scripts in here as well. That is all things you can do, but I'm not going to go too deep in that. That's maybe for another session. So we got our application group. Then we're going to go to virtual app, and you know, we're going to just build a simple virtual app. What I did is I chose a destination host where it needs to run. That's it. I chose my proxy settings, which I'm going to use, of course, so that you know production and that virtual app don't talk anymore. I all just chose everything automatically. I'm kind of the lazy administrator here. I made myself easy, basic single host, but you can really go advanced if you got multiple VLANs so they can talk each other, so you can do that as well. In my case, I like it easy, I like it simple. You got your lab, I'm going to cancel it because it's actually running already, and that's it, it's running. Now, what that happens, if we're going to go to backup replication again, you can actually start a Shure backup job. And I already did that because that takes some time. And what happens is create that virtual app configuration, make sure those domain controls are in there, going to start, and so on and so on. Deploy the proxy, those stuff. And you can see that if I click on one of those virtual machines, it does some ping tests and all that things, and they're finally running. Now, here's the cool thing. I can just click on one of those, and now I can go log in and start doing and testing. And because they're in my application group, they're my virtual app, they talk to each other, and I can do all my upgrades, test out, let it run for multiple days. I started this yesterday somewhere, so it's now 25, 26 hours running. Just let it run, and afterwards, like this, if I just say stop session now, everything will be automatically broken down for you. Everything will be removed. You didn't touch your backups because you use, of course, Delta, so we don't touch your backups. and you have done your work, you have documented, and you're good. Stop session. Another advantage of using backups is that if you use virtual, if you use image level backups, is that you can actually browse into the file system, which means that with simple tools, without actually doing a recovery, I can see the entire file system on my domain controller. I can then use a tool to connect to my database, and I can export now what I want. So I don't always have to use the deleted items from Active Directory itself. And the advantage of this tool is that it recovers the passwords as well. That means if you deleted a computer account or maybe even a service account, which is worse, you can recover it, and the password is there well, so you don't have to rejoin a domain or retype it on all those different servers. Pretty easy to use, and you have, again, your fenced solution. All right. Wait a minute. This one. That was the wrong button. So, how much time do we have left? 14 minutes. Okay. So we're probably going to have to skip a part of this one, but then, you know, we're in those fences, whatever technology you're using, and then we need to do the upgrade. Now, what I have here, and again, you can download this, is just the process how you can upgrade. One thing I did wanted to show you for sure, so the first thing is actually just how we're going to upgrade the functional level, but maybe, how do I, here it is. It's probably a bit too fast. Oh, yeah. One of the advantages is that if you install a new domain controller, Windows Server 2012, he will do the work for you. If you take an existing one, you need to do the forest prep yourself. So you still need to use addprep.exe/forestprep, and afterwards you will need to do the domain prep as well. One thing important here is don't be stupid like I did. Do forest prep, do domain prep. That's not so good. It needs to replicate to all the other domain controls as well. Don't forget it. You can force it, sites and services, but don't forget that you need to do that. And then, of course, it's just a matter of putting in the ISO, say upgrade, let it run for 40, 50 minutes, and you're done. Pretty easy. So, little recap and then some Q&A. AD is virtualization ready, but I'm very happy to see that this room had a lot of people that are actually running it virtual. We've had other rooms where virtualization was a no-go for Active Directory, so I'm very happy to see that already. Forget about the past, use those new techniques to test out, make yourself easy, save some time, still tell your boss you need 15 days to actually test it out, do something else more interesting, learn something, go to TagEd, things like that. Think about cloning, can be used. Don't forget, you're doing it directly in production. Use replication if you have the possibility. You need more resources. And if you otherwise have the possibility, use your backup to do the work for you. With that, I'm going to open the floor for questions. If you have a question, please use a microphone so it's recorded as well.
Thank you.
Hello?
Yes.
Have you guys had any feedback from any of your customers regarding any issues migrating to 2012 R2 domain level with Linux, particularly Red Hat 5, 6, or any down-level client issues in regards to Kerberos authentication?
I haven't, to be honest.
I have.
He has. All right. See why I need an AD guy? Now you know.
So the issue is... The worst thing is, are not specifically Windows Server 2012 R2 level specific, but it is the new encryption that is used since Windows Server 2008.
Cut off again. So if we're at 2008 R2 or 2008 functional level right now, we should be fine?
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
What happens at 2003?
Sorry?
What happens with 2003, because that's where I am right now,
you're
and
not,
we're about to upgrade our AD also.
So you're now at Windows Server 2003 domain controls, is that
yes,
right?
Yes, 2003 domain controller functional level. We have some 2008 domain controllers, but they're still at 2003 domain controllers.
Ah.
Functional level. What happens if we go to 2012?
A load of stuff happens. Are you going to make yourself really You're going to make it really easy on yourself because you're going to get a load of new features. And actually, the list is long, and I've only got, 10 minutes left, so.
No, what I'm asking is with Linux boxes, what do we have to look out for?
Oh, what you're going to see is that Linux boxes are no longer going to be able to communicate with your Active Directory because they're not supporting the new encryption methods. So you're going to have to either upgrade the encryption modules on your Linux hosts or remain on the old level.
So that means I lose all the good features.
Yep.
Oh, yeah, there's SMB signing, yeah.
All right.
Any more questions?
Yes, I have a question. Hey, guys.
Hi. I have no idea where you are because I can't see with the light.
Over there.
Oh.
Okay.
Hey.
So you mentioned that there's a few folks that didn't adapt virtualization for their domain controllers, and my company is one of those. And the main reason is that we really wanted to separate or secure domain controllers from virtualization admins. You know,
yep.
Sometimes virtualization admin is not even part of our company. They're just running virtualization. What you show specifically, it's a benefit that you can crack into VM and recover something. But at the same time, you're kind of, giving a power of the main admin to your virtualization admins. So any ideas if that will be?
Yeah, so this is common. You don't want to give that power to the virtualization team. So I don't like you anymore now, but this is what happens in the real world, unfortunately. And you're right on it. That being said, if you got a virtualization platform that's fully managed, and whether it's VMware or it's Microsoft, you use the right tools, you can completely fence off that specific environment and give access to the domain controller team, so that even the virtualization admins cannot touch that specific part. There's always going to be one user that can get everywhere, like the ultimate virtualization domain admin or whatever you want to call it. So that may be still a scary part, but the other virtualization admins at least will not be able to work on those things. It is possible, but to be honest, it requires some work. It requires some hardening. I'm not sure what the benefits will be, besides then that you have virtualization, that work.
So I guess I'm looking at this, we're using all the, what you're showing is great, using all the bells and whistles of virtualization. But AD got it all, 10 years ago, right? So it's a highly redundant, highly available application.
Yep.
You can bring 50% of your domain controllers down. No one would know about it. So why add an additional layer of complexity on top of what is already redundant?
Yeah, but not everybody probably has an environment like you have. And most of the environments sometimes only have 2, maybe 3 domain controllers, and then it becomes another thing. And then having that mobility, having those things to test, becomes more interesting. So it depends on the situation. But, if you have, nice amount of physical domain controls, all very secured, you can turn off half of them.
So the only scenario, I guess, my company would look at this is to speed up a recovery, through virtualization.
Yep.
So that's the only case I would look at.
Yeah.
Yeah. Until we can actually use, for example, BitLocker on virtual domain controllers, because then it becomes a different scenario, I guess.
Right.
Yeah.
So when you did show recovery, I'm assuming this is not Microsoft. This is Veeam tools, or?
Sorry.
When you said that you can recover objects, including passwords, is that Microsoft?
Or? So there are two ways, right? You can use the password.
Active Directory Recycle Bin.
Thank you. The Active Directory Recycle Bin. You can use that within Active Directory. You have to be at a certain domain or functional level.
2008 02 forced functional level.
Uh-huh. Yep. Here we go. To be able to do that, what I showed you is actually a tool from Veeam, because that can actually take the passwords as well. So that's what the other tool cannot do. But you can do it straight from ADAC if you want to, if you're at the right level.
And the tool from Veeam, is it object level restore or attribute level restore?
It will object plus attributes.
So you can restore a single attribute?
Yeah. Yep.
Okay, thanks.
Oh, wait, single attribute?
Yeah.
Ooh, to be honest, I'm not sure about that.
Because there's a couple of linked valued attributes in Active Directory, of course.
So basically, I'm the one working from Veeam, and he knows better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, we've had a situation where, you know, someone will script something and change an attribute on a thousand of objects.
Yeah,
we can't
restore
them all.
So group membership, for instance, is a linked value attribute. Right. Yeah, that's going to be hard. Yeah.
Okay, thanks.
I'm trying to build a test lab. I have a particular situation where I have to delete about 96% of my user objects. And that was a huge identity provisioning failure that I've inherited. It's about 760,000 users. So my thinking is that if
it's not even near 2 billion, so we can laugh.
No, I still have
that.
Some bits it's left. If I create a clone of that and then disattach it from my existing domain because I've put it now in a non-routable address. It can't reach the rest of the DCs. Is there any issues with the FISMAL roles not existing for it? Or I just go in and edit the metadata and let it pretend it's its own?
You can always seize the FISMAL roles.
Yeah.
So if you use netdom, which is a command prompt, still, you can do netdom query FISMO. You can actually see who's holding the roles. You can, with NTDS util, you can just seize them to that one domain controller if you want to. So you can remedy that situation.
Okay.
It's a nice challenge, I have to admit.
I already talked to Microsoft at their booth, and the young lady working there said I had my work cut out for me because she wouldn't suggest just moving them all into one OU, control A, select all, delete. She said I should do it slowly over a matter of months.
Take a backup, take a risk.
Well, that's my thinking. It's much easier than to send my resumes out while I wait. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, any more questions? Yes.
This on? Oh, there we go. You mentioned that the clone operation in ESX is a hot clone.
In vSphere.
In vSphere.
Yeah.
So if you shut the machine down, does that make it work with the VM generation ID?
Yeah.
So you shut down the
yeah,
VM
so
first.
A little bit more information for you specifically. Microsoft has published a white paper, and VMware has also published a white paper on the various scenarios in which they do and don't reset the VM generation ID from the hypervisor, so you can actually see which actions in which scenarios will give you the result that you want. Because you might want it to be reset, or you might not want it to reset. So for instance, in the first scenario that we've covered with DC cloning, you want it to be reset, but if you use Hyper-V replication, you don't. So I suggest you just to read the various white papers on it and just see if it applies to your situation. You're welcome.
No more questions? Yes, but can you use the microphone if you want to?
Yeah, then it's recorded.
Yeah.
So we don't have to repeat
for the rest,
questions.
You know, already get ready, start parking, looking
yep.
forward to it.
So if somebody cloned the machine and they accidentally put on the same subnet, what will happen?
So if someone uses the clone feature and it doesn't work correctly?
Basically, it's on a live network. And
they
clone the machine.
Yeah.
What will happen?
Okay, so if it's on the so you can only clone on the live network.
Yeah.
It has to contact the domain controller with the PDC emulator role.
Yeah.
Else it won't work. And if that fails, then you're in
So that means in the your current Active Directory, you're going to have two objects exactly the same, identical server name. Obviously, not a server name, but some information is the same.
So, in that situation, what will happen is that either the domain controller starts and says that it's a duplicate domain controller and just mess up your whole network, or it will see that something has happened, and it will start in directory services restore mode. So in directory services restore mode, you can choose to have it authoritatively or non-authoritatively restored, and if it messes up your network, that is something that you could already test in one of the other scenarios. So cloning is scenario one that we're giving you as a method of testing. But if you are expecting trouble or if you want to avoid trouble, you can always use scenario two or scenario three, so the hyperfree replica and your backup in a isolated network to test that.
So if somebody wants to clone the entire, domain infrastructure to another, test lab, and then after the clone, they will isolate it to environment separately.
So just to make that really clear, the DC cloning method is live. You do not take that cloned DC to another network, but you would either, the way that I would use it is I've got a domain controller, I got another domain controller, those domain controllers are really being hammered on by users. I cannot afford to have one off the network for 40 or 50 minutes while I'm in place upgrading it. I'm going to take one of the domain controllers, cloning, create a new domain controller, upgrade that, and get the load across, and then upgrade another one. That's the scenario where I would use DC cloning, not any other scenario.
Okay, I got you.
All right, thank you. Hey, we're over time already. Cool.
What's the recommended configuration for time synchronization for guest DCs?
Could you give me more information on what you're looking for?
Times ago, you have to disable time synchronization with host.
Yeah.
It was on TechNet, so I heard about that. Times are changing now about that.
Yeah. So it used to be indeed if you were running a domain controller or even member servers on VMware, that through the VMware tools, they got the time from the host. And sometimes VMware admins didn't care about the time on the hosts because they were not in the domain, they were separated, those kind of times. And suddenly you saw jumps into the time. And then you had this member server, you tried to log on, it doesn't work, and magically 5 minutes later it did work because then it talked to the domain controller, they synchronized again. So then you needed to do uncheck that time synchronization in the VMware tools. I only know how to do it through the GUI. I have actually no idea. I know there's a KB from VMware that states how you can do it in ESX directly, but to be honest, I don't know it out of my head.
Yeah, and to be really honest,
I need to Google.
I don't even know what the current best practice is for Microsoft on time synchronization for virtualized domain controllers because they've already changed it 3 times. Any more questions, people?
Keep on going.
Does anybody want to know why Microsoft has recommended on keeping at least one physical domain controller? Or is that not something that you want to hear?
Oh, did you?
No one at the mic? No. Yeah, that has been a true roller coaster ride.
I think it has to do with the PDC emulator role, because all your workstations, your servers are all supposed to go there for time sync. And so if that one's not physical and doesn't have its own internal clock, that's where you're going to have difficulties if your VM hosts don't have good time.
Yeah, that was that was one of the reasons. The other reason is that in Hyper-V, and specifically Hyper-V in Windows Server 2008 and Windows Server 2008.2, if you'd have a domain controller and you would make it highly available and you would have a blackout or brownout and you'd have to restart your entire environment, then the Hyper-V host, that had to be members of the Active Directory to be able to have failover clustering, would not be able to start the failover clustering service because domain controllers would not be available. But that luckily got fixed in Windows Server 2012. And you can always use a domain controller that is not highly available on top of a Hyper-V failover cluster. Yep. So there's even more situations where it would break. Yep.
All right. And with that, again, thank you for being here. Enjoy the party tonight. Have all safe flights or safe travel, depending on. And we'll see you next year at TechEd US.
Yes. Thank you.